Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on, online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Uma Pagan, MPK Pagan, alongside Tan Chung Han. I'm sitting in today for Sharad Kutin, who is having a nice long weekend in
jealous.
Singapore, I believe. Yes, very, very jealous, actually. So it's time of that morning to look at the markets or possibly what's happening in world markets. And we've, of course, got Stephen Innes joining us, who is a senior Asia-Pacific Forex trader from Wanda.
Good morning, Stephen. All right, let's begin with your thoughts on that latest attack in London. Now, we've been talking about that on the show quite a bit, but from a markets perspective, you know, given the heightened frequency, you know, of such attacks across Europe, how much will such event risk have to be priced in by investors moving forward, and by how much?
Yes, good morning, Han. It's another clamorous weekend in the United Kingdom. London bore witness to yet another terrorist atrocity. You know, looking at the market impacts, they've been somewhat mute. I think dealers are becoming desensitized to these soft target shocks, knowing that whatever market impact they have over the short term diminishes rather quickly. I think what the concern is here is that these are like soft targets, and they're not being viewed as overly, you know, critical to major disruptions. And I think that's sad in one sense, but also it just shows, you know, how often and how frequently these events are occurring and how quickly the market's just tending to overlook them. So my view is, unless there's a, you know, one of these unfortunate mass casualty events, I think the market is going to continue to expect these soft target events to occur. And I don't think they're going to be any major risk implications of these, unless, of course, they blow up and, you know, we have them just randomly occurring all over the place. But right now, yeah, market's desensitized.
Yeah, market desensitized. And like you said, short-term impact, you know, diminishes over time. So, you know, again, just to stress the point, does it significantly alter your view on, say, the pound or the euro?
Well, you see, the you know, a lot of, you know, we have to consider this UK election. That's going to really be the driver in sentiment for the pound, I believe, just because of its far-reaching implications over Brexit. We also had some polls that were out over the weekend that indicated that the there's a narrowing of the gap to only 1% for the Tories. But the market right now, as you can see, the pound is only trading about 25, 30 pips lower than Friday. The market's sort of thinking we may be in this UK election 2015 deja vu all over again. And despite the narrowing polls, I think what they're looking at is while the Tories are struggling in the big centres like Manchester and London, there's this perception among traders that May can still carry a generous majority, just based on her popularity in the outlying areas. So we could see a you know, despite what the polls are telling us, we could see May carry a sizable majority on Friday.
Now, we also got to talk about the U.S. economy. So we got that non-farm payrolls and wage growth print for the month of May that came out on Friday evening, Malaysian time, both coming in below expectations. What does that do to the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, ugly best describes Friday's U.S. employment report for May. You know, bad was compounded with bad. And not only did the headline miss by some 50,000 market expectations, but there's also downward revisions to the prior months, and obviously it sent the dollar reeling. You know, also this, we have to look at this too. You know, despite the unemployment rate falling, there's still problems with the wage growth component. While it came out on a month-to-month basis on target, the drop on the yearly is still presenting inflation headwinds. And I guess the main takeaway now is that, where's the inflation? And this is really what the Feds are keying on. While I don't believe this is going to alter the path for a June interest rate hike, we've certainly seen a bit of revision towards looking out further along the curve, where there's been a drop in the probabilities in September and December, and that also is weighing on the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm looking at Fed funds futures here. You know, for the chances of a Fed rate hike next week, just under 90%, but going into September and November, they're going up to 92-93%. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that space, and I'm sure you'll help us along the way. Now, switching over to China, we saw its central bank really, as you say, spank the yuan bears last week. So can traders really afford to take on the might of the PBOC at this point in time?
Well, you know, obviously it's very difficult to run a short position on any currency when you're, laboring, paying, 60-65% financing costs. My view on this is it seemed to have just been a reaction towards the Moody's downgrade. It's very difficult to see if there's any or decide if there's any long-lasting foreign exchange policy implications behind the move. Certainly, they were upset, and they vented their wrath at the near-term speculators, the more bearish element of the yuan speculators that are carrying the larger short yuan positions. They really made them pay for the Moody's action. But I think, looking at things objectively here, the PBOC may not be too adverse to having a strong yuan, or at least a stable yuan going forward, simply because of the inroads that are being made in the bond connection, the One Road One Belt initiative, which they'll be certainly looking for outside investors, international investors, to come up and step up to the table. And I think just from that perception, a stable yuan to even a stronger yuan is more favorable, in the sense of, what investor wants to invest in a currency that's going to be weakening? So I think that could be part and parcel to this subtle policy adjustment.
All right, so Stephen, for this segment, we are certainly covering the globe here. We started off with the UK. We talked about the Fed. We have spoken about China. Now let's talk about Australia, because it's going to be a big week here. There's that RBA meeting tomorrow. Also, then the first quarter GDP print due out on the 7th. So do you think the Aussie dollar's moves, at least in the near term, will that be largely domestic driven, or are there still some major externalities still at play?
Well, obviously with the RBA on tap, there is a possibility that there could be a shift in guidance, but we're looking at that as very, very unlikely. I think the RBA is going to maintain the current course on interest rate policy, and basically and deliver what they always do, is like a glass half full approach to the economy. And I think what's really behind the Aussie trade right now, given that interest rate differentials have narrowed to a sliver, they're getting very, very little support from the interest rate differentials right now. It really comes down to, in my view, a view on China and a view on commodities. And I think the big issue right now is trying to decide if the growth situation in China is going to turn more negative, or it's going to sort of bottom out here and start to recover. We've seen some negative implications from last week's not too stellar purchasing manager indexes, and we've also seen the key export for Australia, iron ore prices, fall dramatically below $60 per ton last week. So both of these factors are weighing on the Aussie, and I think going forward these are going to be the keys. So my view is I think it's going to be external drivers that are going to determine the Aussie's fate over the near term, as opposed to domestic drivers.
So very much still about China. Hey Stephen, always a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday morning. That was Stephen Innes, Senior Asia Pacific Forex Trader with Owanda.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.